In the winter, when it gets cold, new dangers lurk upon the highways and byways. First, for legal reasons, let me say that your safety is your responsibility. These are tips, not rules. And for goodness sake, use common sense. Yes, this is a winter weather safety podcast. Let's talk about how to be safe when you're out and about and even at home in winter weather. Okay, first let's have some definitions for the types of precipitation we're going to be talking about. So first there are flurries. This is just light snow falling for short durations. No accumulation or a light dusting at most is expected. Then we have snow showers. This is snow falling at varying intensities for brief periods of time. Some accumulation is possible. Then there are snow squalls. These are fun. Brief, intense snow showers accompanied by strong, gusty winds. Accumulation can be significant. The most famous snow squalls are probably the Great Lakes region, where they have the lake effect snow squalls. Rapidly falling temperatures in conjunction with said snow squalls can cause dangerous impacts to surface transportation. And then we have blowing snow. This is wind-driven snow that reduces visibility and causes significant drifting. So that's piling up of snow in one place. Blowing snow may be snow that is falling and or loose snow on the ground that's being picked up by the wind. Finally, in the snow category, we have blizzard, where winds are over 35 miles per hour with snow and blowing snow, reducing visibility to near zero. Next, there's sleet. These are rain droplets that freeze into ice pellets before reaching the surface. Sleet usually bounces when it hits the surface and does not stick to objects because it's already frozen. It makes a distinct tink, tink, tink sound. However, it can accumulate just like snow and cause hazards to travelers and pedestrians alike. It makes roads slippery very quickly. Finally, we have freezing rain. It is different from sleet. This is rain that falls and instantly freezes once it touches the surface. It looks to be a coating or like a glaze of ice. Even small accumulations of freezing rain can be very dangerous. Large builds up of ice can down trees and power lines and coat roads. All right, winter storms, what are they? A winter storm can range from moderate snow over a few hours to a blizzard, which has blinding wind-driven snow that lasts for several days. Now, some winter storms may be large enough to affect several states, while others may affect only a single community. To make a winter storm, we need moisture, clouds to form precipitation. Our storms are mainly nor'easters that come up from the Gulf of Mexico, so the Gulf of Mexico is the source of moisture for these nor'easters. We also need lift. Usually fronts provide this lifting mechanism to make the storm. And finally, to make a winter storm, we also need cold below freezing temperatures at and near the ground to make snow. Now, small pockets of warmer air near but not at the ground cause our freezing rain and or sleet that we talked about earlier. In the Maryland, D.C. area, we live in prime real estate for the wintry mix. The wintry mix is a nasty jargon term, basically encompassing everything from snow to sleet to freezing rain and everything in between. A change in the type of precipitation happens when the temperatures close to the surface might not be cold enough for all snow, so then we get the wintry mix. Why does Maryland experience this type of weather so often? Well, the Chesapeake Bay is definitely an influence. In January, while land temperatures range from the 20s at night to the low 40s during the day, the Chesapeake stays around the low 40s, making it technically warmer than its surrounding land. This warm pocket can influence our snowstorms, especially tracking into the area from the south. Also, we have the Appalachians to the west of us. They can either be helpful to trap the cold air for our snowstorm or keep the cold air out because it has to traverse the mountains when coming from the northwest. And winter storms impact transportation, aviation, crops, people, and animals. And And now blizzards. Let's up the ante here and talk about blizzards. Oh yeah. Blizzards are a violent and extremely cold-laden wind with dry snow picked up from the ground. It means the following conditions are expected to prevail for 3 hours or longer. 1. Sustained winds or frequent gusts of 35 miles per hour or greater. And or 2. Considerable falling and or blowing snow. And or 3. Reduced visibilities frequently to less than a quarter of a mile. Does it surprise you that a winter storm isn't necessarily a blizzard? Yeah, that's the sensationalist news media for you. A storm must meet these criteria in order to qualify as a blizzard. Let's go on record, shall we? All right, the top 10 snowstorms by totals in Washington, D.C. Ready, go. Number 1, 28 inches, January 1922. Number 2, 20.5 inches in February 1899. Number 3, 18.7 inches in February 1979. Fourth place is tied between January 2016 and February 2010 with 17.8 inches. Then we have 1996, January, with 17.1 inches. Then February 2003, 16.7 inches. Next, we have February 1983 with 16.6 inches and 16.4 inches in December 2009. That one was nicknamed Snowmageddon. And finally, for 10th place, we have a tie between 1936 February and 1958 February at 14.4 inches. The professor experienced half of those, but that's just a coincidence. Okay, a recent example of a blizzard in the Maryland, D.C. area was the January 2016 blizzard, which I think won the Best Forecasted Award, in my humble opinion. Forecasted a major impacting snowstorm over a week in advance. Yay, well done. On January 20th to the 22nd, the governors of 11 states and the mayor of Washington, D.C. declared a state of emergency in anticipation of significant snowfall and blizzard conditions. 7 states observed snowfall in excess of 30 inches, with accumulations peaking at 42 inches in Glengarry, West Virginia. The official storm total in D.C. was hard to determine because, well, the snowboard got buried. It was lost under all the snow. The snowboard is used to measure snowfall officially, by the way. So the ice and snow-covered roads led to hundreds of incidents across the affected region, several of which resulted in deaths and injuries. Unfortunately, at least 55 people were killed in this storm-related incidents, and a total economic loss was estimated between $500 million and $3 billion. Personally, it took me all day to dig out of my car from beneath the 30 some inches of snow that we received. It was really hard work. I took lots of breaks though, and of course refused to hire the so-called help for $100? No way. I'll do it myself. Huge mistake though. I was sore for days afterward. Now, if that was the best forecasted, then the worst forecasted goes to the President's Day snowstorm of 1979. That's right. Reagan National received the third largest snowfall on record, that 18.7 inches I referred to earlier. And the suburbs got even more, up to 32 inches. That's like almost double what the city got, but it was a complete surprise. Yay, right? Then there's the record-breaking winter of 2009-2010. You're probably remembering that, where we got 16.4 inches in DC, December 2009, and then 2 back-to-back snowstorms in February 2010 for a season total of 56.1 inches. That's over 4.5 feet for the season. Wow. Now, if that had fallen all at once, it would have buried the professor up to her neck. Now, I remember shoveling out of our rural driveway on the Eastern Shore to get to the airport and pick up my sister in December 2009. We had 25 inches out there, and it canceled her first flight back home. And then those February storms closed the government for a week. Pretty impressive. Now, the only thing I remember about the blizzard of 1996 was that I got out of some standardized testing in school. Yes! Fist bump. Now, that and the fact that I had a hallway full of Girl Scout cookies to deliver to my customers because I was a record seller that year. Don't mind if I do. Now, back in the country roads of the Eastern Shore, we also lost power for that storm, so we made some dinners on our wood stove. Camping? Inside the house? And the February 1983 storm brought some very rare phenomenon, at least at the time, thunder snow. And this is when lightning and thunder are experienced with a snowstorm. And I recall a little bit of purple lightning with the February 2009 snowstorm as well. Now we're going to switch gears and talk about the hazards of said winter storms and blizzards. So any form of precipitation can make roadways and walkways slick. However, I would have to say that freezing rain is the worst culprit here. I once had the misfortune of parallel parking on a driveway that was coated with about a quarter of an inch of ice. Now I am pleased to say I was successful and didn't hit any of the adjacent vehicles. How, do you ask? Well, number one, do everything slowly. I used my idling speed to do all of the work, no gas pedal involved. Number two, avoid abrupt changes. I can't stress this enough. Yanking the wheel is a huge no-no in a freezing rain situation, or pretty much any winter weather situation. That can lead to sliding or worse, spinning out. Three, gentle on those brakes. Again, from tip two, abrupt changes are bad, including slamming on the brakes. Gently compress. Finally, stay calm. Overreacting causes so many accidents. Now, just so you don't think I have it all figured out, let's address a related danger. This would be a secondary hazard after melting and refreezing occurs overnight. Something called black ice appears. Now, black ice is invisible and it causes a good deal of danger to unsuspecting drivers. Not literally invisible, it's just really hard to see at night, especially. Bridges, ramps, and overpasses tend to freeze more quickly since it is exposed underneath as opposed to a normal road surface, so it's important to pay extra care and attention after any precipitation event around bridges, especially when the temperature is hovering close to the freeze melt point of 32 degrees Fahrenheit. So, quick story, the professor was moving once and had her car loaded to the brink with boxes, etc. I came to an intersection and it was clear, but there was a vehicle oncoming. Believing that I had time, I gunned it and slid right around the corner and into the curb. Wait, what happened? So the temperature was very close to freezing. It had been wintry mixing all day. Is that a word? Wintry mixing? It was a mix of snow and ice. Anyway, on the road, it was dark. I couldn't see the giant black ice patch before it was too late. My overloaded vehicle caused me to underestimate the amount of stop time I needed. By the time I hit the brakes, they were useless against all that ice. Sorry, car. No one was hurt, fortunately, but a good reminder here, even if it doesn't look bad, the storm I just mentioned barely totaled an inch of snow. Seriously. Lack of treating roads, timing of the storm, it was like rush hour. Tread on your tires, and weighting factors of my own car, in this case, all played a role in my unfortunate accident. So play it safe, stay home, and don't travel unless the roads are properly cleared, and only if you have to. Now, I consider black ice to be a mostly natural hazard, another natural hazard being whiteouts. And blizzards are even more fun than winter storms because it can reduce visibility to zero. That means you're lost. Something called a whiteout can occur when you completely lose your sense of direction, in which case it's best to just stay put. what I consider to be one of the greatest tragedies in the United States when it comes to blizzards was the Schoolhouse Blizzard of January 1888. Yes, this was a long time ago. This blizzard swooped in very suddenly over the Midwest during normal school/work hours, and because early in the day it was quite mild, many went about doing their normal daily activities. There was no TV, there was no internet to tell them what's coming, so by the time school and work was dismissed, thousands of people, including many school-aged children, were stranded in the blizzard. Tragically, 235 people lost their lives in the storm. Just one example, a teacher tried to cross a yard into another building only 82 yards away. That's roughly 250 feet, okay? And the visibility was so bad that she and the children that were accompanying her became lost. The three children died. She had to have several limbs amputated, so not a happy story at all. Blizzards are also accompanied by bitterly cold temperatures. Let's not forget the February 1899, the second largest snowstorm on DC record, demonstrated this quite well. The storm set the record coldest day on record for DC at 15 degrees below zero. That's the real temperature, not the feeling temperature, real temperature. And some unofficial reports came in at negative 25 degrees. Brr. Now, a risk in bitterly cold is hypothermia, which according to the Mayo Clinic is a significant and potentially dangerous drop in body temperature due to prolonged exposure to cold. It's definitely a risk, as well as frostbite, which is the condition in which our skin and the tissue just below your skin start to freeze. Now, don't forget that the human body is made mostly of water, and water freezes, so wearing layers, or better yet, staying indoors, is the best way to prevent hypothermia and frostbite. All right, my final natural hazard I have is creatures. That's right, creatures. With the winter temperatures, other creatures will seek shelter inside your home. That's right. Creatures like mice, rats, roaches, maybe even raccoons, right? The famous raccoon in the attic. So just another thing to consider. Now I'm moving to man-made hazards, so down trees and power lines. Ice is a particularly nasty business that can coat both those trees and power lines and then snap them under the unusually heavy load. Falling trees can also cause damage to properties as well. Okay, another man-made hazard is something I am calling snow bombs. After snowfall, it is imperative that you properly clear all snow off of your vehicle, especially the roof. Snow bombs can dislodge and strike vehicles behind you, possibly leading to a crash, injury, or worse. During a snowstorm, if you must be out, reduce your speed, but do not stop. It's very easy to get stuck once your vehicle has stopped. Slowing to a reasonable point to make turns and checking for oncoming traffic at intersections can actually be safer than attempting to start again after a full stop. Plus, if you stop, someone could strike you from behind or the side or anywhere, really. Now, when the professor was driving in 6 inches plus of snowfall in my Ford Fiesta, not a sponsor, my car actually started skidding at one point and the traction loss light came on and I yelled back at my car, "Gee, you think so?" By directing and steering in the direction of the skid, I recovered control. Now, it wasn't easy and I don't recommend doing it, but I was able to safely navigate back to my home. Another man-made hazard is roof failure. Speaking of snow bombs, roof collapses are a big deal with large snowfalls. Just ask the Knickerbocker Theater. In the largest snowstorm on record for Washington, D.C., that 20-inch storm got dumped on the nation's capital. It still stands as the largest single storm snowfall on record. Anyways, our moviegoers were watching a silent film, minding their business on the evening of January 28, 1922. It was a Saturday. And this was the second day of the great storm when suddenly The heavy steel and plaster composed roof collapsed on the attendees. Unfortunately, 98 people died and 133 were injured. Sad face. Now, a bad roof collapse can also destroy a home due to structural damages. According to USA Today, 10 inches of fresh snow equates to about 5 pounds per square foot, which means your roof is likely able to hold about 4 feet of snow. Packed snow, however, weighs more, so 2 or more of old snow is enough to exceed those weight limits. So old snow plus new snow combined can easily exceed your load capacity. An inch of ice is equal to a foot of fresh snow in weight, so it's no wonder that the ice causes power lines to snap. Also, according to Adjusters International, ice dams can cause issues with your roof. Ice dams cause interior water damage by preventing the melting snow and water from draining off the roof, and instead it trickles back inside the property via the ceiling and walls. Another structural hazard, your siding. It also takes the brunt of heavy snowfall, sleet, hail, and heavy winds during winter. They can also sustain significant damage and need replacing. Okay, the final man-made hazard is generators and fires. Yes, generator safety, people. A lot of people will resort to using a generator for their home when power outages occur due to a winter storm or blizzard. I don't have a problem with this, as long as it's used safely and according to the manufacturer's directions. Generators do not belong in your garage or your house. They are to be outside your home. Not following proper directions can lead to fires or worse. Now, along those same lines, some people will start using fireplaces and wood stoves for the first time during a blizzard or snowstorm. Doesn't sound dangerous, does it? Well, except for the fact that if the chimney has not been properly cared for, that can lead to a fire. So make sure your chimney is swept and in proper working order before lighting up that fire. It could literally save your life and your home. Plus, carbon monoxide poisoning is no joke. CO is colorless, odorless, and not detectable by human senses. And maintenance of furnaces and fireplaces is essential for this reason. Proper use of space heaters, extension cords, holiday decorations, those Christmas trees, man, I'm telling you, and more are a necessity for fire prevention. Safety first, people. Now, what is man's response to all this, you might ask? Insurance claims. The top insurance claims in the United States for winter are, number one, wind damage. It says a tree collapse is the third costliest winter weather claim, averaging about $6,000 a tree. Note that wind and flood are often excluded from homeowners insurance. Check yours today. Number two, hail for hail-prone areas, not like us in DC. Number three, frozen pipes. If pipes get too cold, the water inside them will freeze, expand, and burst the pipes. Losses are upwards of $10,000. Yikes. These account for 18% of all water damage claims. Number four, snow and ice damage. Average claim for snow and ice is around $4,700. This includes roof collapses, ice dams, which we talked about earlier, and fallen tree branches. Number five, slips and falls. Obviously, I should have mentioned this earlier. Icy walkways and driveways can cause slips and falls, for which you will be liable. Also applies to falling icicles. That one surprised me. Dead tree branches and other winter concerns. And this applies to you too, so be careful, right? You don't want to fall. Number six, ice on the road. Icy roads cause you to lose your brakes, hide your plane, slide into another object or car. In winter storms, you basically lose complete control of your vehicle, so stay home. Number seven, fire. Yes, fire. Fire and snow damage is almost $10,000, but can be over $30,000. This is from the dry air during the winter time and the increased use of heating equipment, like we mentioned earlier with the chimney use. So how can we avoid all those insurance claims? Well, be prepared. Let's look at some ways to be prepared for said winter weather. Number one, know the terminology. Let's go through a few of these. First, we got a frost freeze warning. That is when below freezing temperatures are expected and may cause significant damage to plants, crops, or fruit trees. In areas unaccustomed to freezing temperatures, people who have homes without heat need to take added precautions. Number two is winter weather advisory. This is the least severe of the advisories. Winter weather conditions are expected to cause significant inconveniences. They might be hazardous, but if caution is exercised, these should not be life-threatening. All right, the next up on the scale is winter storm watch. This is when severe winter conditions such as heavy snow and or ice are possible in your area for the next 12 to 36 hours. Prepare now. Prepare now. Next up in the scale is winter storm warning. This is more severe. Severe weather conditions of the winter nature are expected in the next 12 to 24 hours with 4 to 6 inches of snow or sleet, or a quarter of an inch or more of ice is expected. Seek shelter immediately. Finally, the top of the scale is the blizzard warning. Again, most severe. This is when snow and strong winds, being gusts above 35 miles per hour or greater, will combine to produce blinding snow with near zero visibility, deep drifts, and life-threatening wind chill. This is expected to occur for 3 hours or longer. Next, you should have an emergency kit prepared. This should have food, water, necessities for all members of the family to last for 3 to 5 days. High energy food like dried fruit or nuts. Canned food that doesn't require cooking or refrigeration is best. Any medication needed for said family members. A first aid kit, battery powered radio, flashlight with extra batteries, sleeping bags or blankets, extra clothing and boots, hats and mittens, a fire extinguisher, and emergency contact numbers. You should also have a family communication plan. Inquiring about emergency plans at places where your family spends time, being work, daycare, and school. Have a plan of how you will contact each other if you're separated in locations, different locations, or establish a location to meet at. Have an out-of-state relative or friend serve as the contact person for the family, and learn the location of emergency shelters for your area. You should also prepare your car for winter. Have your car system serviced, check the battery, antifreeze, wipers, etc. Replace wiper fluid with a wintertime mixture. Replace your worn tires, check the air pressure in the tires, and keep the gas tank at full to avoid ice in the tank or fuel lines. Prepare your survival kit for your car as well. It should include blankets and sleeping bags, extra winter clothes like mittens, hats, scarves, and boots, high-calorie, non-perishable food like unsalted nuts, dried fruit, hard candy can help keep your mouth moist, a can and waterproof matches to melt snow for drinking water, a flashlight with extra batteries, a battery-powered radio, first aid kit, shovel, windshield scraper, road salt, sand, or cat litter, cell phone and charger, jumper cables, tow rope, toolkit, and a compass and road maps. All right, before the winter storm blizzard arrives, what should you be doing? Well, know your area's risk for winter storms. Extreme winter weather can leave communities without utilities and other services for long periods of time. Be sure your home is up to standards for keeping out the cold with insulation, caulking, weather stripping. Learn about keeping your pipes from freezing. Seriously, you don't want to not know that. Know how to shut off the water valves in case your pipe does burst. Install and test smoke detectors, carbon monoxide detectors, and have battery backups. Pay attention to weather reports and warnings of freezing weather and winter storms in the area. Sign up for your community's warning system. The emergency alert system provides alerts directly to your cell phone. Speaking of cell phones, charge some backup batteries. These are relatively inexpensive now and easy to find. If the power goes out, limit your use of your cell phone to emergencies only to extend the battery life and turn on your battery life extender. Gather supplies in case you need to stay home for several days without power. A week to be minimum would be the best, without access to utilities or grocery stores. Keep in mind each person's specific needs, including medication. Remember the needs of your pets. Make sure your pets have identification and food. Bring them inside. Never leave them inside of a car. It can get very cold very quickly. And have extra batteries for all of your electronics. Create an emergency supply kit for your car, just like we stated above. And learn the signs of and basic treatment for frostbite and hypothermia. All right, now it's after the winter storm blizzard. What do you do? Stay off the roads if at all possible. If trapped in your car, stay inside. Remember, if you do get stuck in your car, to clear the tailpipe of snow to prevent carbon monoxide from backing up into the cabin and causing your untimely demise. Limit your time outside. If you need to go outside, then wear layers of warm clothing and watch for signs of frostbite and hypothermia. Avoid carbon monoxide poisoning. Only use generators and grills outdoors and away from windows. Never heat your home with a gas stovetop or oven. Reduce the risk of a heart attack by avoiding overexertion when shoveling snow and walking in the snow, according to an article on Reuters.com. Compared with periods without any snow, men were 16% more likely to have a heart attack and 34% more likely to die from said heart attack after a storm dropped at least 8 inches. Take breaks. Make it a team effort if possible. Some people also prefer to do the small bites method, which is going out every few hours to clear snow so it's not as overwhelming. When it's safe to do so, check on your neighbors and elderly family members. For power outages, take an inventory of the items you need to rely on electricity. If the power does go out, keep the freezer and fridge door closed. Use a thermometer in the refrigerator and freezer to know when to throw out your food. Once it reaches 40 degrees or higher, when in doubt, throw it out. Disconnect appliances and electronics to avoid damage from electrical surges. Have an alternate plan for refrigerating medicines or using power-dependent medical devices. If/when it is safe to do so, check with your local officials for locations of warming centers if you need one. And you're going to want to have salt for your roadways and walkways. Remember that in some areas that renters and homeowners are responsible for clearing of public-owned sidewalks. You'll want to make sure you look that up for your locality. Nobody wants a sudden lawsuit. Also, sand or cat litter for traction is helpful when getting out of a snowy, icy spot. So it's better to be over-prepared. But you can only be so prepared, right? Let's say you encounter the worst case scenario. What do you do then? Well, I'm going to take you through a few such scenarios from the book, Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook, not a sponsor. Please note that these are all cold-related scenarios that I could find in the manual. Scenario 1. Let's say you're outside enjoying a brisk winter weather doing some ice skating on a frozen lake by yourself. Suddenly you hit a thin patch and you fall in. What do you do? A. Remain calm as possible. Turn towards the direction you came. Use your elbows to lift yourself out of the hole. Kick your feet and spread your weight out over the ice as you get out. B. Panic. Yell for help. Tread water, alternating hands to wave for attention. Or C. Jump out like you would the side of a pool, using your hands to push yourself up and immediately stand. What do you think? Well, if your answer was A, then you're right. Spreading out your weight is the best way, since the ice surrounding the hole is now weaker. Scenario number 2. So you're kind of having a hard week. Next day you're out boating in frigid waters with your friend, and your boat capsizes and sinks in frigid waters. There is no nearby land. What do you do? A. Swim as fast as you can towards any shoreline in sight. B. Keep your movement at the minimum. Wear a flotation device. If not, grab anything that floats until you're rescued. C. Assume the huddle position, hugging closely to any others, wearing flotation devices to stay warm to be rescued more easily. What do you think? Kind of a tricky one, huh? Well, did you say B because you watched Titanic? Ah, no, actually the answer is C. It's easier to spot you from a plane or helicopter as a large group, and sharing the treading water struggle saves energy for all of you. All All right, now we have two camping scenarios. First one, you're camping one night when an unexpected cold front moves through and plunges the temperatures to the teens. What do you do? A, nothing. B, panic, hastily pack, start running towards civilization. Or C, always bring something to keep you off the ground, insulate your tent, use a mummy bag but don't burrow, add extra layers of clothing, keep anything you don't want frozen in the foot of your sleeping bag. What do you think? Well, some of us would definitely gravitate towards picking B. The answer, of course, is C. Being prepared can prevent a world of sorrows. Next, you try a backpacking trip a few weeks later into the winter, and there's been a blizzard overnight, and you've lost all your supplies. How do you take shelter? A, climb a tree. Keeps you dry and out of the snow. B, just start walking. It's better to keep the blood flowing. Or C, dig a trench and make a snow cave, making sure to note the direction of the wind and make your shelter at 90 degrees to the wind. What do we think? It's very tempting to pick B, yes? Just start walking. But no, as I said earlier in this podcast, walking in blizzards is extremely dangerous. It's very easy to lose your way with whiteout conditions. So C is the best option. Snow is actually quite insulating. Igloos, anybody? Oh no, it gets worse. In your snow cave, you got some frostbite overnight. If you can't reach a doctor immediately, what can you do? A, wear layers, cover extremities if exposed, then remove any wet clothing and wrap with warm, dry clothing, occasionally warming the area with a warm compress of 100 to 105 degrees Fahrenheit. B, immediately direct the affected area towards a fire. Or C, rub the area and rub snow on it. What would be the best thing to do? Well, the best thing to do here is A, warming a frostbite area too quickly can lead to burns, and that would be even worse. All right, now you're driving to Montana to visit your relatives and are caught in a sudden blizzard. How do you continue to drive safely? A, drive as fast as you feel safe to get there ASAP. B, keep your windows clear, use low beams, drive at a slow, constant speed, avoiding sudden movements and watching for ice. Or C, make repeated stops to check the status of the weather in your vehicle. What would be best? Again, as I stated before, stopping can be worse than continuing since it can leave you stuck and stranded. Obviously, driving fast is not the right option, so B, a slow, constant speed is the best option. Okay, on your route to Montana, you start the skid. What do you do? A, immediately jerk the wheel to correct for the skid. B, slam on the brakes as hard as possible to stop the skid. Or C, take your foot off the brake, ease off the accelerator to undo your last action. Steer gently into the direction of the skid, pump your brakes, and check for nearby vehicles. What did the professor say earlier? That's right, no sudden movements. Did you remember? Yeah, the answer is C here. Slow and steady, gentle and calm. Okay, so that bathroom break was a bad idea, and now your vehicle is stuck in the snow. What do you do? A, turn your wheels side to side to clear snow. Place a traction aid like cat litter wood planks under your wheels and increase the weight over your driving wheels. Move your passengers appropriately and rock the car back and forth until free. Gun it, hit the gas as hard as possible to burst through the snow dramatically, or see nothing. Where I like B's energy, A is definitely your best option here. Okay, so now you got out of the rest stop, but the storm has increased in severity and you're stranded. What do you do? A, stay in the car, paying attention to see if you need to poke a hole in the snow for breathing or clear the tailpipe, using extra clothing or a sleeping bag to stay warm. B, stay in the car, but pass the time playing on your phone or watching Netflix. Or C, get out of the car and start trying to reach a building on foot. What do we think? Yikes, it just never stops on our trips, right? Well, yeah. The answer here is option A, again, being prepared. Okay, last one. Temperatures outside have warmed slightly and now it's changed over to an ice sleet storm. How do you survive? A, get in your car and drive south where it's warmer and the ice will be melted. B, stay away from downed electrical lines that could be live, stay indoors, keep warm with extra clothes, blankets, and use your emergency kit. or C, go outside for several hours walking in freezing conditions to find food and water. Yeah, I would hope by now you'd realize staying home was the best option. Option B is best. Even though A is possibly true, you don't want to be on the road right now. So how did you do? Basically, if you got one wrong, you didn't survive. Sorry, this is a miss one and you're done situation. All right, let's summarize and wrap it up here. So we learned about winter storms and blizzards, some hazards associated with each of them, talked about ways to be prepared, and finally rounded things out with an ice-cold survival quiz. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Thanks to Mayo Clinic, the Worst Case Scenario Handbook, the Capital Weather Game, Ready.gov, U.S. Search Rescue Task Force, Adjusters International, Insure Match, and others for their reference materials. See you next time!